we are going to do some. I love doing some different things on Sunday night just to keep you wondering and excited and stuff. So we're going to do something a little bit different tonight. As many of you know, I met with nine of the fellas that have been part of my training those that trained with someone I trained. And we spent Monday, Tuesday, and a good part of Wednesday talking about how to train younger preachers. A number of these men are now in process of beginning to train men younger than them. So that makes them grandkids for me. little different there. But at any rate, because elders had asked these men to start participating in that, they had suggested that we do another one of our reunions, which we've done a lot of, to get together and just encourage one another in the work, and then also to, in this case, take a look at what it would take to train. So you know in the scriptures, in Acts chapter 15 and many other passages, 14, and at the end of Paul's journeys, he would return to Antioch and he would give a report of the work that was done. And these kinds of things, I think, are quite encouraging. So there's a couple of reasons that tonight I want to talk to you about what we talked about, what was in part, what it takes to go about helping a man become someone who can be efficient in preaching the gospel, whether he makes his living from that or not, but the ingredients to that. This is helpful for a couple of reasons. One, you get a look behind the scenes of what we are trying to do and what we're trying to accomplish. I have found, and this is something that I think most preachers would certainly agree, that probably a majority of Christians do not have a very good idea of what we do during the week, or have an idea of what goes on, what's our processes, and what's our thinking, and this will give you some insight into that. So there's going to be a number of different sections that we're going to look at, just a simple outline that we followed. And at the end of each of these, I want to get you, if you're willing, to participate a little, especially if you have a question about something that I brought up. Obviously, we spent a lot of hours together. I can't tell you everything we talked about, but I'm going to give you an idea of that. And certainly your questions or maybe comments or something, I'll stop every now and then. And if you have something you would like to question or add or that you would wonder about, I would be most welcome for you to do that as well. It was fun too because we invited our elders here to come and be a part of this on Tuesday night. Spent about an hour and a half together just talking about what it is, what from their perspective it is like to have to deal with a preacher. So what's involved in that? We had a really good time. I appreciate these men so much and what they did for us and that relationship too. So anyway, here is where we began, and the hardest part of bringing somebody into a training type of program is the selection process. And I've learned this the hard way over the years. I'm one way or another probably trained in the neighborhood of 25 guys or something over the past 40 some years, and so I've learned that making a good selection, helping a guy to understand what this is going to take before we would actually bring him into a training situation, is not only a protection for him, but it's a protection obviously for the church, for the kingdom, for the cause of Christ in a lot of ways, so that this man does not hurt himself or hurt others, and really has a pretty good idea of what he needs to do. So this is some of the things that we go through in this selection process. First off, we ask the question, well, what is his educational background, and why is this question about him important? For one thing, it is important to know his education, just because there's foundational things that are needed in education in order to transfer over into preaching. You've got to have good discipline and study habits. You have to have the ability to write, because even if you're not writing books, you're writing in order to communicate properly. And maybe most importantly, I want to know, did you get a Bible degree? And if you did, and that is your degree, you're not coming in the program. Can anybody think of why? No? Surely you know. What is it, John? Well, no, it's not set in their ways so much. What if he fails? What if he can't take it? What if he can't cut it? Now what's he going to have to do?
Something else.
And a Bible degree at FC, which is, by the way, Bible degrees at Florida College are not intended to make preachers. That's not why they do that. But a Bible degree at Florida College not only is not a good preparation for preaching, which, again, that's not their purpose, but it also is, it leaves a person without the education necessary to get another job. I had one fellow, he had been asking me from the time he was 14 years old, please, when I get out of college, I want to come and train with you. Okay, man, that's a long time ahead. He was dedicated. And he went and he called me about a year before he was going to get his degree. And I foolishly didn't ask him, what are you getting your degree in? And found out when he came that he'd gotten his degree in Bible. And he failed. He did not have what it took to be able to preach. He agreed after about 6 months. He agreed he didn't have what it took to do it. And so he had to quit. He had to go back to school and start from scratch and get some kind of skill. So you can see that that's just not a good position to be in. And so we want to know, what is your educational background? Not that you got to have a degree, not you got to have that, but you've got to have enough education that you're going to be able to handle the rigors of the study and the work that has to go into it. So that's one of the things. We want to know his work background. I find that some men, they want to get in a program or a training program, and they've never really worked outside in a secular job. They don't know what it's like to work. That's not good. I was working from the time I was about 14 years old. But if you don't know what it's like to work and you don't have a compassion and a consideration for the people that you're working with and the hard work they go through and share their wages with you, then you don't have the appreciation necessary that would be in preaching. That's just not, again, not a good fit. What has he been doing in order to prepare himself for preaching? So is it, what's your mentality? Have you, and the most important thing we want to know is, have you been teaching people? Have you been teaching the lost? Have you been pursuing lost souls? Is this part of your heart and your passion? That's more important to us than have you been standing up in the pulpit? Do you have the passion for people? And how have you been preparing yourself to get to that goal of preaching? What are the things you've already been working on? And that's critically important. And we want to ask the question, how do you understand the work of preaching? You know, most people see us on Sundays or Wednesdays and we're standing up here and don't see anything else. And so how do you understand the work? Many guys just get enamored with the thought of being able to stand up here. I'm always worried about somebody who says, oh, I just love to stand up there and preach. Oh, boy. Well, I'm scared of you. I'm scared. I'm scared to death every single week. It is the way we teach, and is what has to happen. But if you just love the woohoo. Yeah, that's not good at all. So we want to know how he would describe, what's his view of doing this work. And certainly along with that, why does he want to preach? What's driving you to do this? What's your real passion here? Why is this brought you to this point? A lot of times, you will figure out in a conversation that the answer is, well, you know, I didn't really like other things I was trying to do, so I thought maybe I'd try to do this. So there's two words for that: get out. It's like, no, this isn't going to work for you. That's not the way this plays out. There's been an old saying for many, many years that older preachers have told younger guys, don't preach unless you have to. And that's in some ways a pretty good recommendation. If you have that drive, then you should do it. Now, you know, somebody might say, well, I need to because I think it's so important. I could do other things and that would be great, but I really feel that I have talents that I better use. Both of my oldest two sons were exactly in that situation. They got their degrees in accounting. Just so happened both of them got their degrees in accounting, and the last few months before they were going to get their degree called me up and said, I don't know what's going on in my DNA, but I all of a sudden feel like I better do this or I might get in trouble with God. So I went, well, okay, there we go. Brent, I love Brent's, he said, Brent all his life said, I'm not going to preach, don't ever, and I said, I'm not asking you to preach, I'm not doing anything. And then he called me that last semester and said, what makes you think I could preach? And I said, I never said anything to you about it, what are you talking about? And I said, well, you do have about 160 years of preaching father to son inside you. I would imagine you can do it if you really have the desire to do it. And he said, you're going to tell me if I can't make it. And I said, oh yeah, I'm going to tell you. I'll fire you quickly. If you can't make it, you'll be out. No problem with that. Anyway, we want to know then why he wants to do that. We talked about considering some of the poor reasons people decide to preach. When I was in California had lots of recessions and the church was blue collar. And it was almost invariably when we'd go into a bad recession and one of these blue collar guys would be out of work for a number of months, and they'd call me up and say, can I come down and talk to you? Yeah, come on down. They come in. You know, I've been thinking about preaching. I would have to suppress a laugh, a giggle, because on one hand, that's really demeaning to a preacher, by the way, to say that, you know, if you can't do anything else, since I can't move dirt anymore in a big bulldozer, well, I think I could just preach. That's just how easy it is. That's right. So that was the first thing. But the second thing would be, of course, is just seeing it as a job, some way to make some money. And I would also always say, now, when you get your job back and you start making that bundles of money, because they made a lot of money when they were working, when you start making all that money again, and you just have this burning desire to preach, come back and talk to me. Never one came back. Nope, that was not where the passion was. There's a lot of poor reasons that people want to preach, and a lot of times it just has to do with a job. So we want to evaluate a man's passion and desire, and that can be a little bit tricky at times, but usually in conversations. I like to invite a guy to come and spend a weekend with me at least, and I just live in their shirt for a weekend. Just want to get to know everything I can about them, feel how they talk about it, how where they're coming from, and those sorts of things really do help me be able to see where this person is in their passion and their desire for this. And then we like to evaluate his ability to write an outline, put forth some content and organization. You know, some guys that I trained, they just bucked up against this. That's not the way I think. I don't care. Because you are the kind of person, I've watched you do that one of your sermons, and you are all over the place. Have an outline so that you don't drive us all cuckoo. You need to have a way of thinking that takes you in an organizational way from point A to B, etc., so that you are understandable and that you are accomplishing something at the end. So what one of the things that we often do is ask a guy to send us an outline of his sermon. And in fact, Brent just had this with a young man who called and was interested, and he said, well, send me an outline. Well, the first thing Brent told me, he said, that was bad. It was just not good at all. So here's a guy who's very educated. He has a degree in something else, et cetera, et cetera. And yet he couldn't put his thoughts together in a good form. So that's not that we're excluding him. It's that we're going to want to work with him a little bit before he would come into the program. In other words, let's see if we can help you. We both have had situations where we didn't take this step, and we got a guy into the program and then had to spend the first 6 months just teaching him how to write. And that's a waste of time. We don't need to be doing that. We're not here to be your English teacher or English lit teacher or something like that. So that's, again, back where that education often comes in. We want to evaluate his speaking abilities, and I will tell you, this is probably one of the parts of evaluation that is lower on the list of importance. For one thing, if and I can usually tell, you know, how does this guy carry on a conversation just personally? When he stands up and even just does something simple like a short invitation, say on a Wednesday night, how does his speaking voice flow? Does he have modulation? Is he able to have good presence? Is he able to just get thoughts out? I had one gentleman when I was in Fayetteville talk to me about preaching, and he always spoke about like this. Always. I had to say, you are a dear, dear person. You love the Lord with all your heart, but you can't do it. I'm sorry. And so you learn things just by the cadence of how somebody sometimes talks and speaks. Can they really fluently give something and give a message? I will tell you, though, for example, when Brent came to train with me, Brent had never given a sermon. I probably wouldn't have accepted him in the program if it had been anybody else, but I knew him well enough to know he had everything else he needed in order to preach. He was a great student. He connected well with people. He had all the other abilities. But his first 3 months, he stood up here like this and he went... and one of the elders said to him once he got over that, I didn't think you were going to make it. But he was very interesting because Brent is near blind, and you wouldn't know that because he wears, of course, contacts. But his glasses were really, they were like Coke bottom glasses. And I think it did something to him as far as how he thought about himself, and he was just real stiff. And one of the members was an optometrist, and he got him into contacts. And the next Sunday night, he stood up, looked at everybody, walked out behind the pulpit, and nailed it, and never looked back from that time on. I would usually graph a guy in his progress, you know, you'd something like this, and he just went, tink, boom. And of course, you saw last week how skilled he is in doing what he's doing. So there's an example of somebody who didn't have that, but was able to, with some work, catch on to it. So it's one of those things that can be learned if a guy has some talent that would go along with that. Now, there's definitely a number of qualities to look for, and I've mentioned some of those in speaking. And then we come to the point where we go, is he ready now? Is he ready now to enter the program? Or, now that we have Zoom, we have a lot of abilities to actually gauge a guy's readiness by listening to him preach online, studying with him, and meeting with him just in Zoom. He doesn't have to be present, and we can do a lot. In fact, most of what I did with Shane Millard, who is a young preacher down in Chattanooga, was online, though I went down there a number of times times and we met for many hours. But in the first year, we were usually 5-6 hours a week together, one way or another. And I was able to help him because he already was preaching full-time there in Chattanooga. So there's ways that we can prep a guy so that we know when he gets into the program, he can hit the ground running. And that's that I think is very important. When evaluate his character, obviously this is extremely important. It is amazing the number of guys that have come to me and were interested, and you just knew from their background they had not developed a good and wholesome and holy character over a long period of time. And this would especially, just looking at a number of things, what's his personality? Does he connect well with people? Is he comfortable with that? Is he disciplined in his life, in his work habits? You know, when a preacher doesn't have punch a clock, and so you're really looking for discipline. I've often noticed some people who decided they wanted to own their business were some of their own most undisciplined people I ever knew, and their businesses failed. If you're going to be someone who is going to preach, you have to be a self-starter. You cannot lay around in the bed in the morning and think, well, you know, what do I want to do today? You got more to do and you know what to do with, and you better get up and get it done. Is he faithful and stable for an extended period of time in his walk with the Lord? I've had people guys come to me who just got off drugs 6 months before and had an up and down and unstable life, and then got mad at me because I wouldn't accept them into the program. And 5 years later, and to this day, have fallen away and gone off into the world. Well, that's the last thing that, you know, you want, and you don't want to subject a church to that, and you don't want to subject him to the pressures that go in to preaching. So in an interview process, we discuss our expectations. I sit down with a guy for a number of hours, and we talk about what is going to be needed here. What's your work hours going to be? If you think this is a 40-hour week, then this is not a work for you, because it's not that kind of thing. You're going to be working 50-plus hours regularly for the rest of your life. So don't think that you're just going to it's just going to be a nice little 40-hour a week job. I had first guy that the elders at El Cajon, when I first started preaching, when I arrived there, they had a guy that wanted me to continue training because the previous guy didn't work with him very much. And it was, he's a great guy, but it was a disaster because his wife was so dominant. She didn't want him to preach, and she didn't want him to work any more than 9 to 5 every day. So that ended up to be a disaster, and I had to tell him at the end, I can't recommend you to someone else, because you cannot be a preacher if you have a wife who is dominating you that way. So unfortunately, they're not even together today. He's still a fine Christian, but that was her problem. So you want to work on work hours and things. Flexibility, you have to be flexible. There is going to be any number of times that you're going to be called upon. There is a need. There's somebody you can teach. Obviously, you have to have some flexibility in that. You're going to have to work evenings. Get it out of your mind if you think you're just going to come home and, at 5 or 6 or something like that, and it's going to be over. You're going to have to study evenings. Because why? Well, because that's when people are off work and you can study with them. You can get Bible studies with some people in the daytime, but a lot of your studies are going to have to be in the evening. I had enough studies when I was at El Cajon, well, even my whole time in California, that usually I had 2 classes every evening. I would try to have one at 5:30 and one at 7:30. Usually didn't get home till 9 or 9:30 at night, because there were so many people to teach, and you just have so much evening time. So I still do that at times here, but there were a lot more opportunities in California a lot of times than there are here. So you have to be prepared for that. And in all of that, we got to balance time with family, because the last thing we want this man to do is to not have a good family life, not to have he and his wife in passion. Passionately in love with one another. One of the great mistakes preachers have often made, my uncle warned me of this, is to spend so much time on the work that you neglect your wife or your children. Can't have that either. So there's a lot of things that you have to do, a lot of give and take that you have to do in order to work that out so you're not neglecting your wife or neglecting your children. That's very easy to do. And then expectations of what he will need to learn. And we talk about a lot of things there that I don't have time to deal with, but just showing those expectations. Here's the things that we want you to learn that you're going to have to learn over time. By the way, part of this one here, and every guy that I've trained have always said to me that the most important part of the program, I always ask him at the end, what do you think was most important? And almost to a T. Most important part of the program is that I will say to them, the key to your learning is that you have your office right next door to me, and when you have a question, I expect you to get up and walk in my office and interrupt me and ask the question. Sometimes I'm going to like, not want to because I'm really busy in the middle of something, but you must do that. And there are times we would have sometimes hours of conversations in which I'm giving them my experience to prepare them for when some of the same things are going to happen when they are on their own. So that's really critical for a man to be able to share experience of what he's been through and what it takes then to get to the other side of trials and difficulties that would be in life there. And just those expectations that we said about the work ethic and what needs to be done. I've always told the guys, if I ever have to tell you you're not putting in your hours, you are done. It's over. I'm not going any further. If I have to tell you that you are not putting in your hours, we're done. You have to have the passion where that's not a question. I want to rather have to tell you to stop and go home and be with your family. That I would relish being able to tell you, but I better not have to tell you that you're being lazy. Because when you get on your own, you're going to get lazier if you're not going to do it when I'm watching over you here. So that work ethic is extremely important in this. By the way, you know what? One of the things I do with that, I will point you all out. I will say, now, did you notice, what do you know about brother so-and-so or sister so-and-so and the work they do and how hard they work? When do you think they get up to go to work? Probably 6 or 6:30, right. When do you think they get home? Probably 6 or something, right. They're sharing their wages with you. You better work so that you are worth what they're doing for you. It's intolerable otherwise, much less God's watching. So those are the kinds of conversations that I will often have with guys, and thus the possibility of dismissal from the program. And if I dismiss you, if I say you're not hacking it and you can't do this for any reason, you need to understand I will not recommend you to another church. I will actively try to keep you from preaching because I don't want you to get hurt and I don't want the church to get hurt and I don't want God's kingdom to get hurt. So please understand that. I'm willing to go to the mat for you if you'll put all the effort into it. But if you're going to slack, then that's the way it's going to be. It's just not going to work any other way. All right, so that was the selection process. There's a lot of things there. All the rest just have one slide. But I'm going to stop right there. Any questions about that or any... anything you are interested in that? I didn't know whether you would think in those terms.
Are you normally approached or do you approach someone else?
It's happened both ways. Probably more often I'm approached, but there have been a number of times when I see something in someone, I will watch them and study them for a while and figure out some background before I say anything to them. But yeah, there are times when I've said, you need to be doing this because you are extremely talented and have an ability to do it. Good question. Yeah.
That are surprised at the amount of work that go into preparing
a lesson. Yes, absolutely. Scott, my second son, I will never, you know, Scott here's trained as an accountant. So he's trained to accomplish, get it done within, you know, and all this kind of stuff. And so I've told some of you this story before, but when he started training with me after about, 12, 13 hours of working on a sermon, he came in and he says, "I'm so frustrated. It ought to be done by now, and it's not done, and I can't get it to work." And you've heard me say this, but I said, stop trying to write a sermon. Go back and study the text to grow you, and then share your growth. That takes a lot of stopping, slowing down, meditation on yourself. Know yourself, learn yourself, grow yourself. The text that was read for us tonight is exactly what Paul's teaching Timothy. You pay attention to yourself and your growth. You will then save yourself and those who hear. So if you ever notice, you know, everybody I know evaluates preachers. Oh, he's so good. He's good too, but not as good as him. And yeah, we all know that goes on all the time. Really hurts our feelings really bad. No, it doesn't. I'm just kidding. But that goes on all the time. And the difficulty of that is when you find somebody that you go, boy, it just seems like they're just saying a sermon all the way. Just like they're delivering it. It's just going out there and just plopping. It's usually because they just wrote a sermon. They haven't engaged their whole soul into this and learned it themselves. A lot of you came out this morning and said, ouch, to that sermon this morning. You better believe it. It broke both my legs before I preached it. So yes, that's a tough one, but it better impact me before it impacts you. And I guarantee you, I make it impact me before I'm going to tell it to you. And there isn't anything I'm telling you that hasn't cut me deeply first. The sword of the Spirit brings some blood on the preacher if he's going to do a good job. That's just the way it is. And so very, very important. Good. Those are good questions. Anybody else on that? Yes. Yes.
He has a helper now, so someone's helping him.
Yeah.
And the whole time, it's really double.
Oh, absolutely. Thank you for that. That's exactly right. Spoken by someone who knows. But that is so true. Yeah, if I start training a guy, my hours are increasing exponentially. And it's usually not till the second year of the program that he's going to start maybe helping me a little bit and taking up some of the slack. There's a lot of hours that go into that without doubt. And it doesn't matter, by the way, whether I preach standing up here this following Sunday or not. I still have a full week of work that I have to accomplish. So this is just even extras in some ways. Good points. We want to talk about a typical work week with a fella. Again, we're trying to teach some discipline. He has to know what he needs to accomplish every day. So it's really, you know, one of the things about having, you know, you're your own boss, so to speak. You have to set your own deadlines. And so I know that I have to have sermon number one done by, and because if I don't, then I'm going to run right into family time, and I must have time for my wife, and I must have time for my children, and I want to. So I have a very strict. I have to get this done. And it's interesting that some people don't understand that. They think, oh, I've had people say to me, oh, well, you know, I'm sure you could just stand up and do it. Yeah, I could stand up and do it, but it wouldn't be to the standards that I want and the standards that would be something that would help you grow, and certainly the standard that God wants from me. And unfortunately, there are preachers who just do that. They just rely on past knowledge, and you know what it tastes like? A cold can of string beans. That's what it tastes like. And it's not worthy of the work. So know when your work week should finish. Again, time for family. So I set a deadline when this ought to be done. When each day there's a deadline I have that I have to accomplish these things. If I don't accomplish it, then I'm in trouble. then I'm going to work into time that ought to be balanced in my own life, and I can get overly tired, and then I'm Barry is a grouchy boy, you know. So that's, and Teresa's a grouchy girl. So that's not good either. The importance of starting on Monday. So if you know very many preachers, you know lots and lots of preachers take Monday off. And I have always been against that. And as a matter of fact, there is no one who's ever going to train with me who says, I want to take Monday off. I'm sorry, you're not going to take Monday off. That's not the way this is going to work. And the reason is a number of things. For one, it allows you some cushion in sermon prep. In other words, things aren't coming together well. I still have times where I have this happened just about 5-6 months ago. I'd been working on thoughts of a sermon. I'd been jotting things down. I thought I had it. Okay, I'm ready to write the week that before it's going to happen, and I wrote it. I got done with it, and I didn't like it. There's something missing here. There was something missing. I just couldn't put it together. I set it aside and had another lesson that I was ready with and that I was good with. And so I went ahead and preached that, and I worked the second week on the other one. At the end, I still wasn't happy. It took me 3 weeks and over 25 hours before something clicked, and I went, that's what I've been missing. And the sermon then was what I liked. It was the way it came out. I was good with it. But you just don't know. You have to have a cushion, especially as a young guy. You just have to have a cushion in that. Allows for emergencies, unexpected opportunities. The old adage that my parents drilled into us. You work first, then you're playing. You're not playing first. Get that out of your mind. Saturdays, all morning long, we're working. Afternoons, you get to play. That's the way it is. And Teresa found out very early on in our marriage, she said, can you just please take this Monday off so that we can go and do this and do this? Because we can't do, and you could work Friday instead. And I said, sure. And we got about halfway through the day. She says, you're not here, are you? I said, no, I'm not here. I got a million things on my mind and I can't get engaged. We can't do this. It makes me too nervous. And so I want to take off Friday. By Friday, I've usually had over 50 hours of work in, and I want to take off Friday, and I can just breathe, and I can enjoy the time off. So teaching them that is very important, and then warning about working half-time each day. A lot of guys will work just 5 or 6 hours every day of the week. Well, you know, you work 6 hours for 6 days, and how much work have you put in? 36 hours, and you think you've been working all the time. No, not really. And besides that, that's not balanced. That's not balanced. That's not good for you personally, and it just doesn't play out well. So I want a guy to start on Monday, hit the ground. I do, because here's the thing. I know so many guys, they're finishing their sermon Saturday night. Okay, how's that sermon going to work Sunday? It's not. It's just not. And especially when you are new to this game. All right, another thing, preparing sermons. What is the goal? By the way, we spent hours on each of these. So we talk about the goal in preaching is to draw a person to love God. The goal is not primarily to just teach them about right answers to issues. We talk about that, but we want our Christians to have a right relationship. Relationship with God is the key. Learning to love God is the key. What has kept me preaching over the years is the number of people who have come to me after a period of time and said, you know, even though I've been a Christian for 50 years, for the first time in my life, I can say I really love God. And it's because you've shown me the beauty of God in the Scriptures and who He is. That's the goal. That's what we want. Hosea 6, verse 6, I desire steadfast love, not sacrifice, the knowledge of God, not burnt offering. So that is very important. You and I both get tired of preaching that just stands up every week and says, here's the right issue, and here's the right answer, and here's the condemned, the people are wrong, and you know, that that gets old, and there's some importance to that, but it needs to be in the proper context. So we want to prepare that. We talk about the positive effects of good preaching. A lot of times guys don't understand the positive effects of the work you do into sermons. It teaches Christians how to be better Bible students. When you watch Brent preach, when you watched Andy preach, or when you watched Eric preach, what did you learn? You learned something from them of how to study. You learned their observations. You learned their carefulness in reading the scripture. All of those things are key to what we want in a guy who preaches. And because you learn how to study, I'm convinced that the amount of simply topical preaching that has gone on in our brotherhood has caused Christians to be poor Bible students. They just read the Bible to see this verse. They just see a verse. And it's because there's just been topical preaching. Grab a verse. 25 verses later, I came up with a topic for you. Bad study habits, bad preaching habits, and not really very exciting either. Creates an atmosphere in which Christians want to invite. Do you want to invite somebody to worship who you know the preacher is going to just lay an egg every week? No, you don't want to do that. So that doesn't help any at all. Generates personal Bible studies. People are comfortable with a preacher, a teacher, who they know they can have confidence in. He can handle the scriptures well. He's gentle. He's careful with how he speaks. Things like that are always important, and you're putting that out. And so we want to train a guy of the importance of the good preaching. Causes visitors, obviously, to want to come back. I had one young preacher told me one time, he says, "Well, I just figured people had come anyway, regardless of whether the sermon was that good." I'm like, no, they're not going to come anyway. There's other options, and one of them is to shoot you. Quit it. You know, don't do that. This is a very, very important work. Studying to prepare for a sermon. Of course, one of the things we talked about is how we can help a person study to prepare, what that preparation is going to take place. This passage was read for you tonight. That's so much into it. I've talked about that. You need to grow yourself so that you can grow others. So we don't want to write a sermon. We want to grow and then excitedly and passionately share our growth. Bad habit, writing sermons to tell the church what's wrong with them. Right? Yeah, that's what I want. I want to come every week and you can tell me what's wrong with me. Now, we got to talk about what's wrong, but we got to talk about how to help that and how to fix that. And we want an intrinsic motivation, not an extrinsic motivation. Oh, he's preaching and I better do something, otherwise he's going to get mad at me. No, he drew me to show me what God desires and how much God loves me, and therefore how much I must love God and what it takes to serve God. All the difference in the world of what we want from our Christians. So we're going to train good study habits, how to see big pictures in the Bible, how to see messages of the book, how to see thematic connections through the scriptures, how to break down a text. We're going to really in detail of just how to be a good Bible student is certainly part of that. And again, the need to study for the young preacher himself to truly grow his love for God. That is very, very critical. Our goal is equipping the church. So a lot on Ephesians 4, 11 through 16, on what it takes for shepherds and evangelists and teachers to equip the church. And some of the things we're equipping them in, I'll hit this very quickly, living holy lives, being able to love one another, critical in a congregation, loving and connecting with people who are in the world, and bringing them, being able to bring them, creating a culture. We're going to create a culture. I talk to young guys about this all the time. Trying to create a culture in the church where everybody is excited about helping others come to Christ. And that lifestyle is critically important. And teaching members how to become an encourager, how to especially greet visitors, new members, how to treat people so that others are again saved, and being an active, passionate Bible student and participant in Bible classes. You have no idea how important it is that you participate in Bible classes when visitors are present. They see that excitement. They see your passion. They see your interest, and then they go, "Wow, this is amazing. God is truly among you," like you read in 1 Corinthians chapter 14. And of course, how to teach unbelievers is part of that equipping process. Let them see how you do it. Let them help you, and that is also critical. Sermon prep. The types of sermons, there's a lot of different types of sermons. You may not be aware, there's all kinds of types of sermons. Expository sermons, where you're just really seeing the Holy Spirit's message. We always emphasize, if you're not seeing the Holy Spirit's message, dump the sermon. First and foremost, what's the Holy Spirit's nut? You don't start a sermon by what do I want to tell the church? That's bad. bad. You need to show them what God wants you to tell the church. That's it. So there's narrative-type sermons. There's thematic sermons where you're seeing a thread that goes through the whole Bible, surveying a book in one lesson. Most Christians don't have a good grasp of what's the message of a book, what's the message there, and how to do that is very difficult for a preacher. Preaching through a book, where they're seeing the whole message of a letter, like we did with 1 Peter and other things, very important. And then the challenge of making application. You know the most difficult thing for a preacher to do? Make good applications. That's very hard. It's especially hard for young, but it's hard for everybody who preaches. Learning to do that well it takes a lot of meditation and a lot of work. That's without a doubt the hardest thing of everything to do. And then the danger of the how to use a commentary and the danger of using commentaries. So some guys ruin all their original juices by just reading commentaries, and then just spitting out what they had there. That's, again, open a cold can of beans. That's just about how good that comes out. So you want to see the message yourself. You want to internalize it. Treat commentaries like some friends that you have who've studied the same thing you studied. And then have a discussion with your friends. That's really the way you want to see it, not as a crutch. And that's used that way. I think one more here. So we're training to teach and edifying Bible class. Understand the purpose of Bible classes is not to lecture. Lecturing, yucky poo. That's no good. There's a purpose. We want to train so that you're able to speak the truth in love. Ephesians chapter 4, verse 15. We're trying to help the church be able, this is our batting practice, to jump into the game when we walk out. So that's why it's important for you to learn to see a text and say, here's how I would explain that text. There's a lot of danger in just lecturing. You can do that in a sermon, obviously. Preparing Bible class booklets that aren't just a list of questions, but inspire study is a challenge. How to lead a discussion in a Bible class. That's extremely important. We have a reading list of books that we do during training, all kinds of controversial subjects. Got to be able to accurately represent both sides. On divorce and remarriage, I know the sides that I don't agree with. I could argue it and pin you to the wall because I know it that well. And I've had discussions actually with the people who hold those views. And so that's important to be able to do that. Christ-centered preaching is a series of lectures or books by an evangelical man and group that have done a really good job on showing how we need to approach that. I thought that was the last one. Working with elders, what to expect, what to learn. That was a lot what we talked about on Tuesday night. Communication time together is critical. So I was talking to a young man recently, not real young, in his mid-30s, who just quit preaching, at least for a time. And in an hour and a half of talking to him, I realized that the main problem was he just didn't have communication with the elders. They didn't feel it was important to communicate with him, and it left him frustrated, and he gave up. So sometimes it's the preacher's fault, sometimes it's elders' fault, but there's a lot that goes into in a work of a preacher. We are, by the way, by nature, very, very insecure people, because every week we are being tested in front of you. And that's a scary part, and we want to do our best, but it that insecurity can lead to struggles for us very clearly. So we have to know our job. The elders have to know their job, and we are a team together. Working with authoritarian elders a lot of times is working with elders who do not see the preacher as a team with them. You know, Ephesians 4:11 through 16 says the evangelists, shepherds, and teachers equip the saints. So that's we're a team in doing that. And we don't have that. The elders a lot of times just react to every little thing, and they make a lot of rules, just reacting. Then anything goes wrong instead of actually leading. The other side of the coin is passive elders who don't really lead. And I'd probably, if I had a choice, I'd probably have more of the passive elder. But on the other hand, that's a struggle, because then that adds 20 more hours a week to my work, because I'm trying to chase after people that need to be shepherded. And that doesn't happen. How to work with difficult members. Brent's a master on that one. When he moved to West Palm Beach, they hadn't had a preacher in 7 years, because they got so mad at the one who was there, they said, we'll never have a preacher again. So the first 5 years, he had two or three people in the congregation that gave him fits. And Brent talked to us about this. It was so good. He would be very patient, and he would listen, and he would say, I'll certainly look into that. Thank you so much. And it didn't matter how upset they got and how much they treated him and how much he was, he just... I don't know how he got that good character when he was young, but he didn't get it from me, I can tell you that. he was so good, but he really, really, by the time 5 years had up, the people actually loved him that were his strongest critics, because he was patient and how he acted. So that's just terrific, a real thing. And so then we had quite a conversation about thinking correctly about your salary expectations. You have to be content. And yes, you're going to go to churches who never ever think about the fact that there's a cost of living increases going on, and they will never think about that with the preacher. But that's okay. Most people churches are a whole lot better day than my grandfather's day, when he'd bring home a couple chickens and some cans in the back of his trunk of his car. So we're quite thankful for those things. I've taken up enough of your time here. So we're equipping a man in a personal life. And we'll just, I'll skip all of this. But by the way, we want to have a discussion with his wife. I have twice found out it was hidden from me that his wife did not want him to preach. Sorry, young man, I don't care how much you want to preach, you can't do it if your wife is not going to support you. It's just not in the cards. And maybe one other thing here, Facebook and media posts. Stop it. It just makes it look like you're just there on Facebook all the time. Some guy's just throwing a jillion things on Facebook. Look what I was doing this week. Look at the barbecue I was at. Look at me. Are you working? You can have some hobbies and recreational activities, but keep that low key, and you better be putting in your hours. Very, very important. And of course, a life of holiness. We have to have conversations now again about pornography. With men all the time. We do not want somebody who struggles with that deciding that they're going to preach until they've whipped that addiction. That's a very, very terrible addiction. Thank you for being so patient with me on that. I thought that would be something, maybe, hopefully, that was encouraging to you and exciting to you, just to know a little bit about what's going on behind the scenes. Thank you so much. We're going to sing a song right now, and if there's any way we can help anyone, please let that be known while we